What does the goddamn line say, Tony?
Please do not use gendered language.
Then what? I'll be arrested, put in airport jail.
Well, you're going completely sideways, man.
It's a big club, and you ain't in it.
How dare you?
Mr. Speaker, the President of the United States.
I'm Chris Hansen with Dateline NBC.
Jack Mary is Tack Theratrix.
Hi, I'm Spartacus.
Steve Jackson, Sacramento, he, him.
Steven Seagal.
Sex offender guy.
I'm Keith Morris.
This is Muammar Gaddafi.
I'm Rick James, bitch.
Sorting through the lies.
The hijacker's passport was found blocks from the World Trade Center crash site, if you can believe that.
We cannot track $2.3 trillion in transactions.
And uncovering the centuries-long plan for world domination.
Learning about Cuba, having some food.
Let's talk about Chinese people.
Have you ever been in a Turkish prison?
I have sent six of my Libyan missiles to blow up the Sears hardware department.
Nothing could be more fun than jumping off a cliff to German bisexuals.
Oh, you English are so superior, aren't you?
Thank you, comrade.
And now, macroaggressions.
That's what assholes call it.
With your host.
Buddy, I don't know who you are, but you're about to get chlamydia.
Charlie Robinson.
Hey, Whitey, where's your hat?
You want to drop the blame on Charlie and say it's all Charlie's fault.
He was a retard.
I get some goddamn diuretic.
Welcome to Macroaggressions. I am your host, Charlie Robinson. If you are watching us on Rockfin, Odyssey, Iconic, well, you're probably not watching us on YouTube because I just got a couple strikes there. Or you're listening wherever podcasts are served. Thank you very much. I do appreciate your continued support. There's a lot of choices out there. The fact that you're spending an hour of your day listening to my brand of insanity is both humbling and kind of alarming about your taste. Anyway, we can't do the show without the amazing support of our sponsors. Well, I just had Tim James back on the show, and you probably know about Chemical Free Body. This guy put me, you know, he just found a way. He pushed my buttons and got me. He got to my competitive side and said, you got to do the Total Energy and Detox Bundle. It's 90 days worth. I think you can do it. Maybe you can't do it. I don't know. You know, he kind of messed with me a little bit. And he said, I'm going to send you these products. Just take it in the morning. And that's all you have to do. Do your regular routine, workout, whatever you do. But what you're going to notice is that you're not going to be hungry all that much. Or when you're eating the normal amount of food that you normally eat, you'll eat about half as much and you'll be like, I'm stuffed. And it's like, okay, all right, well, we'll see how that goes. That's exactly what happened. So that I wound up after the 90 days filming a video about it just to show that Tim was correct in his assessment that I was going to feel better. I was going to lose weight. I didn't even have weight to lose. I still lost weight. So you can check that out. Go to chemicalfreebody.com/macro. And when you go there, there's like a 2-minute video that I shot. And then there's information about all of this stuff. The Total Energy and Detox Bundle. I'm telling you right now, it works. 100% it works. The stuff that Tim is making it's great. It simply does exactly what it's supposed to do, which these days is kind of like amazing and kind of rare. So when you find somebody that's doing what they say they're going to do, you kind of latch on. So I would suggest if you're in the market for vitamins and you're not getting them from Alex Jones, then take a look at what Tim's doing, chemicalfreebody.com/macro. Take a look at the little video. And when you're checking out, use the promo code macro as well to save yourself some money. And speaking of getting yourself, saving money and getting yourself ready for what's coming, I don't know, maybe the zombie apocalypse, My Patriot Supply has been nice enough to not only work with us, but to set up our own branded website. So you can go to preparewithmacroaggressions.com, and that'll take you to this website that they've made for us. They've got, you can get 4 week supplies of food. You can get 3 month supplies. They have all kinds of every kind of product you can imagine and a bunch of things that you couldn't imagine. They've got them. Sometimes they have seeds. I guess that depends on the time of year, but it's certainly worth checking out. Look, if 2020 has taught us anything, or as we're here halfway through 2021, supply chain breakdowns are feasible. It's something that could very well happen. And when that happens, food is going to be impacted. And you just do not want to get yourself in a situation where you have to go out and battle the masses just to get your hands on some macaroni and cheese, you know? So be proactive, not reactive. Let's use the fact that you're listening to this podcast means that you're into some weird stuff already, and you're probably on a watch list or two. So at least take there is some added benefit to it. I mean, not many to listening to this stuff, but there is one. You're going to know things in advance of other people. So take advantage of this and go get yourself prepared. Go to preparewithmacroaggressions.com and take a look and see all the things that they've got. And if it's right for you, pull the trigger. And if not, that's okay too. But just get yourself prepared. So I'm both excited for this episode and simultaneously wish that we didn't have to do this episode. First of all, let me introduce, I've got Ian Webster here. He's from Australia. He's a former rugby player. He had a really great podcast for a while until it got nuked. Must be doing something right there. So welcome to the show, Ian. How are you? Nice to meet you.
Thank you for having me. And as you mentioned there, I'm nothing. I'm just a man talking about things and very much appreciate yourself and the truth telling community that do speak about these things. And I didn't really get to understand the full force of censorship and trying to suppress information that is almost imperative that we know. So I believe, you know, if we just ignore history, we're friggin' destined to repeat it, right? So what happened was I started to look into things, and it's funny. I've gone back and yourself, Luke Rutkowski, Sam Tripoli, I've really gone through all of the different things, and I noticed there's a real trend here, right? The things that you guys have been speaking about for the last 4, 5, 6 years has all played out right in front of our eyes. And the cognitive dissonance of people that are listening to you, but still saying, no, it's not. No, no way. Yeah. Okay, you was right about those 9, but this 10, you're definitely going to be wrong about, you know?
Yeah.
So this is, I'm really, like I said, mate, I'm a very much a white belt in this community and swimming amongst a bunch of black belt sharks like you guys, but it's absolutely frightening. And I've got a story here to prove it.
Yeah. And the story that you sent over to me was heartbreaking. And mm-hmm. very real. And it's not, though it happened in Rockhampton, Australia, which for some strange coincidence, I've actually been there many, many years ago. It happened there. It is not limited to that geographical location. This is a trend that has happened in several places. You've covered it in your new show that you've launched, the Willie Webster Show, which I think people should check out. I watched, you sent me the link to the YouTube version of it. So I watched it, but it's audio. And I got to hear the story of this school in Australia and mm-hmm. what the kids went through. And it made me, so it connected to me because I have, I went to a boarding school for high school. It wasn't religious based or anything like that. It wasn't a troubled kid school, but I do know what it's like to be away from your parents, to be at a school, to be trusting the administration to look after you and not do the unspeakables. And also I know that that's just luck, to random luck. Like, you hope that the reputation is of the school is good. You hope that the people that you entrust your children to are going to take care of them. But we've heard too many stories of this going wrong. So it really kind of, it hit me, in a personal way, though, fortunately, I don't have experience on the on the abuse side, but I do have experience with the school side. So what you sent over was, it's called Nightmare at Nearkol, NEERKOL, for those that are interested. Can you just fill us in on what this is and how you wound up coming to this information?
So let's, if we take a, let's zoom out on the whole thing, right? So when you just spoke about the specific vulnerability and the most vulnerable people in our society that we have to look out for, it would be the children that are sent away from home and entrusted into these organizations, right? They would be the people that I would consider most vulnerable and most in need of care, especially by the people that have been trusted to care them. But then when you add into that the people that didn't choose to do that, but they were forced by law or forced by government, then it adds an extra element of vulnerability to these kids.
Yeah.
Because no longer have their families chose. Now they have the hardship of, I have to go, otherwise mom will go to prison. I have to go, otherwise we'll be taken away from these families forever. So what happened was across the 1900s, and like you said, it's happened across the world. It's happening right in front of our eyes in a different version right now. And we'll go into that a little bit later. But the story specifically was, it's an orphanage in Rockhampton in Queensland. Now, Rockhampton, as a general, is a working class town. It's north of Brisbane. Like you said, you've been here, probably comparable to the Rust Belt areas of America. Very close community. So for something so tragic to happen in that area is almost, for it to not be intentionally ignored is inconceivable. It really is. So as a rugby player, a professional rugby player, I was traded and I came here. I'm from England originally, from a very small working class town, St. Helens in England, in the Northwest near Liverpool. And I was traded and I came here at 21 years old. And on my arrival, I always heard stories of this. There's a building that's been closed down for years and, you know, they would do ghost tours and it's segregated. It's now private building, right? But the stories told of it were always of, it's a ghost place, it's a haunted house, but no one ever spoke about why. So it was almost, you know, the grey lady stories that you hear of and the headless knight that runs around the cemetery. It was almost mythical to the point where it was mythical, right? So about six or seven months ago, I have this channel now on YouTube. And look, the story, the audio book that I'm releasing, I'm doing it for free and it is on YouTube and it's episodic. So it's just episode by episode so people consume it as they wish. It's also available on my Apple and Spotify, so podcast areas. Okay. The reason I didn't add video is I'm very hesitant to rejoin one of these big technology brands because you invest so much time into these things and it can be taken away just like that. So I'm looking at what you guys are doing and the different platforms and I'm trying to build my own website. And what I will do is I will release it as a full audio book on the website when it's all finished. Mm-hmm. But it's so heartbreaking to read. I couldn't do the whole thing at once. I was in tears reading chapter 3. I had to stop. So the story, it's basically a bunch of orphans across the 1900s were put into care and have now come out in the 90s and the 2000s and pressed charges against the Catholic Church, in essence. And the stories that I'll take you through and go into with you are absolutely, it's debauchery at the highest level. It's if I told you it happened without this proof, you would laugh me off the show. It's I hope that provides a bit of an insight from an overview, like I said, zoomed out. But if, as you dig into this specifically, the Sisters of Mercy were entrusted with this building. So there's different levels. It's almost that it's been passed through a few levels that nobody can assume accountability because it's almost, oh well, that wasn't us, it was them. Mm-hmm. So the government gave this building to the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church then entrusted the Sisters of Mercy as a subsidiary to run this place. Now, this place doesn't work without people in it. And there wasn't, at the start, there was one stream of entrance. There was the indigenous Aboriginal Australians that they were just taking, ripping from their families and putting in there to convert to the Catholic Church. That's how it started. Mm-hmm. Then from there was a second stream introduced, which was a bunch of kids were ripped from the families in Ireland and England, and they were shipped across to Australia to start to populate these communities. And I'll use their words. It was good white British stock to populate Australian regional areas. That's their words verbatim from the Royal Commission that came out afterwards. Then the third stream. So there's two streams of, it's heartbreaking. And there's two streams that are already in the against the will and against the family's will. Mm-hmm. Then the third stream of people that were put into were from the state. So the state were taking custody of kids. In this particular man, Garnett Williams, his father died. He was in the war. So the government, the state government decided that mother wasn't fit to look after four kids. We're going to take them from her, but we'll give her a proposal. We'll give her two options. We take them from her and she never sees them again. They go to state wards. Or she agrees to them to take on the Catholic Church as a faith and will maybe hook them up later on in life. So at 8 years old, this man was ripped from his family. No need, wasn't a child, wasn't an abused child, wasn't going through trouble. The family was fine. They were 20 Ks away down towards the beach, but they still had the authority to take this kid and his brothers and sisters away from mum, who was struggling because father died, mm-hmm. and put them into this. So now they got three streams of children, but only one stream of children were on the books, and that was the state wards.
Wow. Okay, so that's how this thing gets started. And this is, so the authorization for this is coming from, is it coming from the Catholic Church? Is it coming from the Australian government? Is it a combination of the two? How is this? Who's in charge here?
It really depends how you perceive in charge, right? I mean,
I guess, yeah.
So, and this is a theory that I'm playing with at the moment is all of these countries that we see that came from nowhere, right? So Australia, America, they're discovered. Why is it always Christianity that discovers them? Why is it, yeah. why? So we think about what's the most common factor about all of these places is the timeline. If you can control the timeline, you have full control, right? So why, if Australia was only found 200 years ago, why is it still 2021 here? If America was only found whatever day America was found, we all still subscribe to this, the date of Jesus's birth as our whole timeline.
Right.
So then, for the government in Australia, who were then put in charge of this to actually adopt, I don't know who is in charge. And like I said, it seems like for me as a businessman, if I wanted to set up a shell company to avoid accountability, it would be very easy. Mm-hmm. And we could do it 3, 4, 5 times. And then all of a sudden, the flow of accountability stops somewhere and nobody actually takes accountability.
Yeah.
So for me looking in, it seems as if there was cooperation. Yeah.
Okay.
And within this, the Royal Commission that came from it, there's an admission of guilt from the Sisters of Mercy. There's an admission of guilt from the Catholic Diocese, an admission of guilt from the Queensland State Government and the local police force. All four admissions of guilt. Whoa. One person was trialed. Sorry, I repeat. Sorry, I must take that back. Two people were trialed and prosecuted. One was already passed away, so it was almost irrelevant.
Right. Whoa. Okay. Yeah. Well, that sounds like that sounds like what happens when the government is involved in nefarious business, and then mm-hmm. they get caught, and then the public demands some sort of accountability. Then they have a trial, and they find one guy that they pin it on, or they say, "Well, this guy," you know. And then we've seen this play out quite a bit. We've seen this play out in your country as well, with George Pell and the Catholic Church, and how, you know, all of a sudden they said, well, we've got this one guy. Let's go after him. He's convicted of rape. He raped these altar boys. Okay. Well, we'll give him 6 years in prison. And then 13 months later, they have an appeal, and guess what? He's out the back door. And the Australian media is not allowed to talk about the trial too, which Bingo. I thought was really interesting. So you can kind of tell when the manipulation is starting by who's involved, how the media is able to cover something like this, how the courts are instructed to deal with it. And then a lot of times in the end, it just kind of, everyone's going, yeah, so what happened to that guy? And they go, mm-hmm. Well, you know, things. And they go, yeah, but he's not in jail. Like, didn't we convict him? Yeah, but you know, there was a technicality, and we had to let him go. Oh, okay. So you fixed the technicality. You're going to go arrest him now? Nah, it's just best that we leave it the way it is. And you're like, get the fuck out of here. Like, this happens all the time. So I'm not surprised. I mean, I'm horrified, but not surprised. So what was the process? So these kids come to Near Cole, almost all of them, I would assume all of them against their will. One coming from the indigenous Aborigines. They're just stealing, which, by the way, this happens everywhere.
And it's unfolding right now in Canada, where they're finding the unmarked graves.
Exactly.
It's a story that I've only revealed after I started releasing these audiobooks. People have started to reach out to me with their own stories, and I know it's all anecdotal and I understand that, but if there's enough evidence piling on, it's, you know, there's no smoke without fire, is there? It's got to be a mark of that. They can't all have these misrepresented memories.
Absolutely. You're right. And I want to read something. This is, since you're speaking of this happening in Canada, we have a situation in Kamloops, British Columbia, 1964, where there is a report of the Queen of England and Prince Philip arriving, touring the facility, having a nice little picnic lunch with a group of kids, and then taking 10 of the children away, and they disappeared. This is a quote. I want to read this. This is from the International Tribunal into Crimes by Church and State. This is an interview with William Coombs, who said this. He says, "I am an interior Salish spirit dancer and am 58 years old. I live in Vancouver, Canada. I am a survivor of the Kamloops and Mission Indian residential schools, both run by the Roman Catholic Church. I suffered terrible tortures there at the hands, especially of Brother Murphy, who killed at least two children. I witnessed him throw a child off a three-story balcony to her death. He put me on a rack and broke some of my bones in the Kamloops school basement after I tried running away. I also saw him and another priest burying a child in the school orchard one night in October 1964. When I was 12 years old, I was an inmate at the Kamloops school, and we were visited by the Queen of England and Prince Philip. I remember it was strange because they came by themselves, no big fanfare or nothing, but I recognized them, and the school principal told us it was the Queen, and we all got given new clothes and good food for the first time in months the day before she arrived. The day the Queen got to the school, I was part of a group of kids that went on a picnic with her and her husband and some of the priests down to the meadow near Dead Man's Creek. I remember it was weird because we all had to bend down and kiss her foot, a white laced boot. After a while, I saw the Queen leave the picnic with 10 children from the school, and those kids never returned. We never heard anything more about them and never met them again. Even when we were older, they were all from around there, but they all vanished. The group that disappeared was 7 boys and 3 girls in age from 6 to 14 years old. They were all from the smart group in class. Two of the boys were brothers, and they were Metis from Quesnel. Their last name was Arnous or Arnold. I don't remember the others, just an occasional first name like Cecilia, and there was an Edward. What happened was also witnessed by my friend George Adolf, who was 11 years old at the time and a student there too, but he's dead now. So that was a statement given by William Coombs, who wound up dead after that statement. So
there's so much to unpack there, because that is a mirror image of what happened here throughout all of this testimony, right?
So while I'm listening to your show on it, I'm remembering this story, because I knew about this story. I didn't know all of the details, but I'm going, sounds like the same sort of thing to me.
So it takes me back to, you asked who's in charge.
Yeah.
Is it the church? Was it the monarchy that really did control everything? And we know that the monarchy set up all of these places, because Britain was sending the felons or whatever they were to fill Australia, right? And it's quite ironic, because now the Australians call English people POMs, the prisoners of Her Majesty. So it's been reversed psychology over here. Now, with those instances you just mentioned, exactly the same. So kids were thrown off buildings.
Yes.
Kids that were wet in the bed would have to sing and dance with the wet sheets around them in front of all the other children, while the other children were made to beat them with sticks. Children, there was a lime pit in the opposite the presbytery, where they would either, I've been told, and I don't know, I can't confirm this, they would either bury children in the lime, or some people used to call it the abortion pit. That's where they made abortions, which takes me to another story. A woman has just reached out, and she was raped by one of the priests in charge at the time. So she fell pregnant and escaped. The Catholic Church, 18 years later, made her go back to have that boy anointed and baptized by the church that she was conceived in.
Whoa.
So it didn't just finish. It didn't just finish and you was forgotten about. They knew that they had a child, you know, a bastard child running around somewhere, and they had to, 18 years later, bring that child back to be baptized. Which takes me to, you say that the 10 children never came back.
Yeah.
Now, does that mean that those children were killed, or does that mean, knowing that they came from the smart class, does that mean that the Queen of England decided that they were the good stock, that they would send to somewhere else and start again?
Yeah. Yeah. That's exactly what I thought when I read that it said that they were from the smart class. I was thinking, well, if they're going to be using these kids for some perverse ritualistic reasons, which we know that the monarchy is really into, or all their crazy satanic stuff or their pedophilia, I would think that it wouldn't matter their level of intelligence. But the fact that he said that they were from the smart class made me think that their selection was not accidental, and that it, and that in fact it might have been part of them replanting, reseeding them somewhere else into another territory that's under the monarchy's control. I mean, take your pick, right? It could be Australia or South Africa or India, or you name it, right?
Mate, let's look at Latin America now. It's highly Catholic, highly, highly religious. And you guys are suffering from this mass inflection across the borders.
Yeah.
And it's just come out. I see the guys on the Drinking Bro podcast, they broke this news last week. Dan Holloway, Key West. Have you ever heard of the company Key West?
No.
They're funded by the American government, and they sell property to their own companies that they have. And they're all over for child immigrants. They're smuggling child immigrants. And they're the ones, through the name of Christ, through the name of the church, they're the ones at the moment, and you'll see all these, young Latin American kids in the airports with little briefcases and signs on saying, I don't speak English, take me to this place. Now you're actually seeing them transported by these agents that look as if they're either state agents or employed to ensure that these kids get to where they got to be, shipped around America and placed in these different places.
Yeah, there's something going on here for sure.
I'm just going to have some more whiskey. It's going to get even deeper. Trust me.
I'd say go for it. the emergence of children with the monarchy, with disaster relief organizations, is always to me a red flag, because it seems like, you know, like the Red Cross has this reputation, like, oh, they come in when things are bad and when, you know, when there's a tragedy and everything. Look, I'll tell you right now, don't let your kids anywhere near the Red Cross.
No. And I can tell you, as somebody that has worked for charities, done a lot of work for charities, none of that money goes to those kids. It all goes to admin. It all goes to CEOs. Do not give. If you want to give to a local charity, make sure you're involved with it. Volunteer in a way that you know that you can make a difference.
Yeah. So the school, so how long was the school in operation between the time that it was granted to the Sisters of Mercy and they started operating it to the time it became a haunted house?
So from the late 1800s, around 1870, around 100 years. Okay. It was closed down in 1978. Okay, so in 1978, they closed it down, but nothing came to surface until the 90s, when these people that had left, the last batch of people that had left, 20 years, 30 years later, actually said, you know what, we need something here. This is not right. And they all started to speak out. When this mass kind of corruption got brought to the table, there was no option. The media couldn't hide it anymore. The Catholic Church, it was the toothpaste was out of the tube. It couldn't be put back in. So they had to force this royal commission. Now, a royal commission ensued. And again, zero accountability came from it. Each person that went through the orphanage was ordered to receive by the Catholic Church a payment of around, you know, $40,000 biscuits compared to what they deserve. To this day, they're still fighting for their money in courts. To this day.
Oh, okay, well, it's nice to know that things are equally as fucked up in Australia as they are in America, because this is the same sort of thing that would happen in America too. I mean, you'd get a jury, you'd go through a trial, or there'd be some sort of thing, and they'd say, well, we're going to allocate a certain amount of money for you. And then it would be held up on an appeal, and then someone else would come in and appeal. And next thing you know, it's like 8 years later, and the people are like, can we have our money? And they're like, well, there's still a technicality. We're still battling it out. And it's like, you get the feeling, oh, I see what's happening here. You're never giving that money out. You're going to always find some sort of reason to do that. And what a shame too, that it takes, you know, a decade and a half or two decades after that for people to start feeling comfortable enough to even talk about it, you know, let alone
it's crazy. And it's weird that we see this course of justice as let the course of justice play its time. Let's let it unfold. But it's almost the process is the punishment, you know, like the process of that course of justice is the punishment, because by the time these guys get their money, they've already spent it on the process to get it and more. The process is the punishment, not, and they've already been through hell.
Yeah.
You know, like it's not fair. It's insane. And I really want to, I don't know what I can do personally, except for put this out there, use my platform to put it out there. Look, like I said, my children, I do believe that some good things do come of faith. I believe you can be taught good traits, but it's more of a personal level. You're taught to take accountability. You're taught to respect. You're taught, you know, but the people that are teaching it aren't practicing what they're teaching.
Right.
That's the issue.
Right. So over the course of a century, God, when I think of it like that, that's just a long time.
On the books across that century, there's probably, I think nearly 5,000 names on record of kids that went through there. However, it's probably triple, quadruple that.
Yeah.
Given the fact that there's a lot of kids that weren't put on the record.
And does Australia have a problem with the indigenous community, like the way, like I've been to Alice Springs. Okay. And I've, you know, you get off the plane, you know, you go around and there's Aborigines everywhere. And it's fascinating for me as a white American to see this. And then what I realized was, okay, we've got our own versions of this at home called the Native Americans, the Indians. Right. And then I see what happens in Canada with their native people. And a common theme starts presenting itself, unfortunately, and that is when the white colonizers show up.
Yep,
the brown indigenous people start getting rounded up. They first uh-huh. start getting a religion forced on them, which by all accounts they didn't ask for. They start the destruction of their culture, which is probably maybe the most reprehensible thing you can do. And then it's the slow, maybe even not slow in all cases, the indoctrination where you start to see the changing to the indigenous people, changing the way they dress, changing the way they talk, changing what God they believe in, moving them into schools, moving them into cities before. So we saw that in America.
Yep.
The Indians have been treated so poorly. There almost aren't any anymore.
Yep.
Canada, I know, has a similar problem. And of course, the Aborigines are made famous in America because of fucking Crocodile Dundee. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. So our version is totally warped anyway. I went there the first time I saw an Aborigine. I was like, I felt like I was seen like an alien. I was like, mm-hmm. I remember sitting on an airplane and they were walking down the aisle and I was like, whoa, this is crazy. They look almost gray. And I felt like I would love to, like, even at like 13 years old, which is how old I was when I was in Australia, I was thinking, I would love to just talk to these people mm-hmm. and find out what's going on. I see that as like, I'm fascinated with their culture. The white settlers see that as, we got to get rid of all these brown people as fast uh-huh. as possible. It's crazy mm-hmm. to me. So are the Aborigines in Australia, are they treated like second-class citizens still?
Yep. So exactly what you said. Again, everything seems to relate back and it happens in worldwide. It's not isolated. So the issues that you would be told or be made to believe that they have within their communities are only issues that were injected by the settlers. So what like I
alcoholism.
Mean by that, alcohol, yeah. drugs, only things that were injected into them by the settlers. They're the only issues. Now, when you speak about the rich history and the indigenous ways of living, if they were left alone, they would happily live that way. They do not want to be messed around with. They do not want their traditions messed around with, and so they shouldn't. But the injection of what's now classed as normal or society has really, it's fucked up the whole community and their access to live the same way. And, you know, there's one place here where I live where it's actually a closed community. But it still is policed by the state. They don't want the police's help. They would happily live in an anarchist fashion mm-hmm. and they would get along just great. They would have their own tribunals. They would have their own court systems and everything would work fine. But the fact that the state still wants to control and police based on what they think is right, it becomes an issue. But we class that as that's them, the troublemakers, or, you know, it's not for, and you're right. It's almost treating them as a second class citizen.
And for the school, for the Nearcoal school, was it disproportionately targeting the Aborigines early on? Or like you said that there's three streams of people that were coming mm-hmm. in. But was this done as a, I would assume they would be the first, right? Since they're yep. local. I mean, before you yep. start importing people in
you know, to build back the or build up the stock, then you're probably so were they. I wonder, were they given a choice to assimilate or be
no
killed or assimilate oh. or I mean, I wonder what their options were.
I don't believe there was a chance to assimilate. No, I believe it was, really? We're going to take these people and you either move into town that we create or stay out there and have no help. Mm-hmm. But we're taking the children regardless.
Ooh, yeah. So they would get they would try to move the families closer or just, was that irrelevant?
No. No. It was irrelevant. Yeah.
Okay. So we're dealing with some people that are evil at their core. Now, I understand. Oh. I'm not a particularly religious person, but I understand people they find their religion. It does something great for them. They get enthusiastic about it. They think if it did something great for me, maybe it'll do something great for everybody else. And they want to tell people about it. I have no problem with that. That's, you know, if you've had a good experience with something and you want to talk about it, that's fine. The problem I have is when you start forcing people against their will to, have to believe in a particular God or a particular way of being, be that changing somebody's, you know, changing the way they dress. And I say that as a, you know, as an American who, let's face it, I mean, America was built on doing exactly that to the indigenous people. And then rubbing it in their face in our history book saying we discovered the continent. I mean, it's frankly, it's embarrassing. And
that's exactly right. And you look at the timeline, we're in 2021. The indigenous people have been here for 60,000 years.
Right.
How did you discover it?
last yeah. week?
That's like me saying, oh, I've just turned on, the internet here. I discovered the internet. I don't care what all you guys have been doing for the last 15 years. I've just discovered the internet here. And yeah. if I have the power to put that across, then that's mine. It's insane. And we just accept it.
Yeah, that's the problem. We accept it. And so when a situation like this comes about in the community of Rockhampton had to have known. I mean, it's not the biggest, it's not, like you said, it's not the biggest place in the world. They had to have known that this was going on. They knew that there was a school there. And like you said, that there was, it would be inconceivable for them to not know that something was going on there because of the influx of children. So what?
Well, let me read you the admissions of guilt here. Please. And this will probably put it into perspective. So, admissions of guilt and neglect from one party, the Sisters of Mercy. Ready? And this came from the Royal Commission that came in and the inspection from this. The Sisters of Mercy, we are satisfied that during the period that the orphanage was in operation, the punishment administered by some nuns and employees was cruel and excessive, did not accord with the regulations in place under the relevant legislation or framework. Second admission of guilt, the Catholic diocese. The parish priest did not have any formal responsibility for the children in state care who resided at the orphanage. However, there was a considerable degree of contact between the priest and the children at the orphanage. The priest exercised his influence on the orphanage. The third admission of guilt, the Queensland state government. The evidence of sexual abuse given by the survivors related primarily to Father John Anderson, Father Durham, Father Cale, Father John, all nuns, old ground workers, and former employee Mr. Baker. Only Mr. Baker was alive at the time of the public hearing for prosecution. He was represented at the public hearing, though his counsel denied the allegations against him. However, he goes into here and apologizes after the allegations have been classed as denied. So his admission of guilt is separate. The police's admission of guilt. We are satisfied that the department officers did not provide a system of supervision for the delivery of care to children in the orphanage, which would properly guard against the children being mistreated and thereby suffering horrific harm. They had little or no opportunity to speak with the State Department inspectors because visitors were infrequent. They did not think they would be believed. and they were frightened of reprimand from the sisters or employees or site visitors from local towns nearby.
Oh, man.
So okay. All four levels have accepted and admitted. However, only one person at the time was alive to be prosecuted. So it was swept under the rug.
This is what we do in the United States, where we get guys like Donald Rumsfeld, who thankfully recently passed away. Well, he says things like mistakes were made, you know, just a general vague topic. Like, we don't want to live in the past. We're focused on the future. Mistakes were made. I can just see these political cockroaches there saying, you know, with this school, mistakes were made, but we don't want to live in the past. We're looking forward to all this. No, I'd like to live in the past for just a little while so that we can figure out who these people were. Now, like you said, if the perpetrators are all dead now, it's been a long time. The idea of getting justice takes on a different feel to it. It's not justice.
This is where it becomes a little bit more ambiguous, because they mention all employees as the admission of guilt. All employees partook in the neglect and in the abuse of these children. But it only names by name the ones that had passed away. All of the ones that fall under all employees are still alive.
Okay. Well, they'll go travel all the way around the earth to find John Jemenjuk, the alleged Nazi executioner, who's like 95 years old, find him in some town in Michigan and say, we're gonna try this guy for war crimes. It'll stop at nothing to get him. But if you're involved in, you know, maybe the disappearance of who knows how many kids, the brutal torture of kids, you know, we're just going to let you slide. We won't name anybody in these indictments. We'll name some people, but of course they'll all be dead and you can't do anything about it. This sounds like a cover-up to me. Is it not?
Thank you. Yes, it's very much a cover-up. And to your point, they're happy to prosecute the Julian Assanges that talk about these things.
Of course.
Because you're the guy that brought this to the attention, so you're worse than what Hillary Clinton did.
Right.
Don't worry about what she did. That's gone. We're not going to live in the past there, but you brought this up, so you're going to be the one on the table for that one.
Yeah. Yeah. So we've got a common denominator here that I think is can't be overlooked. We've got the Catholic Church that has a horrible reputation. We have the monarchy, which also has a horrible reputation, you know, when it comes to little kids. The Catholic Church and the monarchy have a lot in common, and their abuse of little kids. Now, these schools are nothing new. There's Catholic schools everywhere. I'm not trying to suggest that at every Catholic school there's unspeakable things happening, but I will say this, you know, we know about the Pink Floyd songs, you know, we've watched the videos. I've seen The Wall plenty of times. We know about the reputation of the Catholic nuns, hitting kids, hands with rulers and things like that, and being in this sort of very physical violence. What is it about the Catholic Church that they seem to always have ties to physical violence towards kids? Aren't they supposed to be the good guys?
And I'm going to push back on something here, because we've chosen to send our kids to a Catholic church because we want them to have good education,
right?
Good manners, respect.
Right.
So I do agree with you. I don't think it happens at all Catholic churches. However, they do have a correlation, and it can equal causation in this part, right? So they do have the history of physical abuse. What I've really tried not to do with this audiobook is attach my emotion to what happened, mm-hmm. because I don't think it would be fair to class or to judge the actions of 1950s to today. And what I mean by that is, when I was in school in the 90s, we were hit across the knuckles mm-hmm. and that would be frowned upon today, right? So we can't judge by the same standards, right? However, when you go to this level of extreme, all bets are off. This is now unforgivable.
Yeah.
There's a line, you know, that it's not just the movements of times or how times have passed and a slap across the knuckles. We're talking about physical sexual abuse.
Yeah.
Every day.
Yeah.
Like that's past that line. I think it's important to make that point. We can't judge it by today's standards. However, there is some things that can be judged forever and ever.
For sure. Like the kid that's getting raped and has to manage the fact that he's bleeding and can't let anybody see that. So he's got to take napkins and fold them up and stick them in his underwear so that nobody can see it, because he's terrified that if somebody sees it, then he'll get in trouble, because then that secret will get out. And so that is something that there is no expiration date on. That it's like you said, whether that happened in the 1950s or the 1850s or 2050, it's still going to be not okay to do that to kids. And yet that was happening there, and the stories of that are, you know, obviously
barbaric. They're barbaric.
They're barbaric. Yeah, yeah.
That and, particular,
and I can understand that there might be a way of a line of thinking where you say, listen, we take some kids need discipline more so than others. And some kids need to, you know, we've got like in the United States, there's like a scared straight program where they take these kids that are screwing up and they make up, they do a tour through like the local prison and they have them like meet all these inmates, and the inmates try to scare the shit out of them, say like, you come in here, man, I'm gonna, you know. So there's that, right? And you can you could definitely do that, and you can install different levels of accountability and punishment and things like that, but the stories here went beyond that. There was no benefit to the punishment. It was torture for the sake of torture. It wasn't beatings for the sake of turning you into a better person. It seemed like, at least according to what, you know, the first seven episodes that I got through, that it was violence for the sake of violence, not to prove some point about trying to whip you into shape or make you a better person.
And it was probably even worse than that. It was probably at the amusement of those conducting it, which becomes more sadistic. It wasn't just a normal. It was almost enjoyed by the perpetrators.
Okay.
I told you it was going to be a big one, man.
I try to put myself in others' situation, others' shoes and things like that. I can't seem to ever get myself into the shoes of these people that are hurting children and somehow justifying it. I get it. I know that there's some component of this that they were abused and then they, you know, repeat the abuse and things like that. And I understand how it works, I suppose, but there comes a point in time at which you are making the decision that, am I going to be beating this child or not? And these people are choosing to do it. And the thing that makes, to me, it's disgusting regardless, obviously, but what makes it even worse is doing it under the cover of religion and using that as a shield to you know, reflect or deflect any sort of criticism, to say, this is God's will. This is, if you don't allow me to do what I'm doing to you, then I have I'm the only person that gets to talk to God, and you want to go to heaven, right? So if you don't let me do this, then I'm going to tell God you're a bad kid and you're going to hell. And like, it sounds kind of cartoonish to us as adults, but as a kid, you don't know that this guy doesn't have magic powers. You've watched,
you're already in that mindset, because the thing that they was telling you is there is only one mortal sin, and that is to report this abuse. The abuse that I'm carrying out on you isn't a mortal sin. But for you to go and tell somebody that is a mortal sin and you will never find your way to heaven.
What a piece of shit somebody has to be to do that.
Look, I'm happy to go on record and say anybody that abuses a child deserves a bullet in the head. That's my standpoint. So I'm not speaking on anybody else's behalf. Right. That's my standpoint. If you hurt a child, you deserve a bullet in the head. You don't deserve to breathe anymore. Yeah.
You don't rehab that. You don't send people, we've sent people to prison and he's very sorry and he did 10 years and he got out and he's rehabilitated. If you're raping children, you're broken. Your brain is broken. You're not fixable.
You got to go.
I have no problem with that either. I understand. I understand. Well, I was, the abuse was done to me as a child. Okay. Well, but you know what? Then you should know better than anybody how it feels. And you should know better than anybody that it's not acceptable and that it didn't make you a better person. And so I hear their reasons, but I still never, it still never works for me. And now, as we were in sort of current times or over the last 15, 20 years, now we start to know, not just think of rumors, but know about what a guy like Jimmy Savile was doing, his relationships with the monarchy, his relationship with the media, which I would suggest as powerful as the monarchy, And how a guy like this, a procurer of children for the rich and powerful, is able to navigate through the world without ever seeing the inside of a prison cell, to me, is just amazing. And yet it happens. And
I think the more we're speaking through this here, there's one that seems to keep popping up. It's the American government doesn't have any jurisdiction over Australia, doesn't have any jurisdiction over Ireland. The one people that keep to pop up over every single story we mentioned is the royal family.
Yeah.
And the one guy that escaped from this George Pell thing was the guy that was based here in Australia, Prince Andrew.
Yeah.
So who's really in control was your question at the start.
Yeah.
I believe we've started to work through it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we know the Vatican is up to some nefarious things. And I can say that without that being an indictment on every single component of the Catholic Church. I'm not going to pretend to say that your local church is necessarily a reflection of the Vatican. I don't believe that, but it is it's a franchise, and if the people at the top are running it poorly, or they have a desire for children, they have, they're involved in massive amounts of money laundering and all kinds of unspeakable things. Well, it's reasonable to criticize these people at the church, but then you find very quickly the relationship between the church and the monarchy is like this. They are so tight. You've got them, you've got pictures of Savile with the Pope.
Yep.
I mean, that should never happen in a healthy society. Of course, it should never happen. But once you start to dig in and you get into, for those of you, I'm not going to go into this, but if anyone knows about Ninth Circle, I mean, that'll get us deplatformed immediately. So I'm not going to go into the details of that. I'd say people can look that up. You start to find out that there's a lot of inversion going on, that the people that are held up at the highest levels, the church, the queen, the presidents, the head of your police department, the head of your school, all of those people may vary, you just reverse it and find out they're the worst people. They're the worst people in the world, in fact. And when you come to this realization, slowly for a lot of us, and it's tough because you spend your whole life not ever even considering that. And these poor kids that wind up in these homes, I mean, like your story was talking about how they're getting on a boat in the UK and they're excited And then they're not excited when they get, then they're terrified. Then they would click up together and go off and cry because they just wanted to go home. And they thought home was just not too far away, but home is thousands. I mean, a boat journey from England to Australia is months.
Six weeks. Yeah.
You're probably even more
back then. Yeah.
Yeah. And that is, you know, I mean, dangerous too. Now you just jump on a plane, you know, if you're able to, not that anyone can leave your country these days, but,
we'll get into that later.
On a plane and you're there in a couple of hours. But back then, you know, to have this, to think about this, to just for a moment, put yourself in a position of these kids. I remember what it was like for me, my first day at boarding school. It was like, I wasn't scared that I was going to get beat up or wet my bed and have them parade me around with my wet blankets around me, making me, humiliating me. But I was in my own way alone, without my family. I did not know what I was going to need to do or how I was going to need to act. It turned out to be a great experience for me, but for many people that first day, I can't even imagine for these kids that get put on this boat. And then next thing you know, they show up there to that's traumatic enough to get to some place and you hope you're going to a good school or wherever. You just hope that. And then to get to a place that can probably best be described as a torture factory.
Yep. Well, it's you're going to put yourself,
and yet it's being ordered from all accounts at the highest levels here.
So I can speak to that personally as well. So coming here as a 23-year-old established professional athlete was the scariest time in my life. I came here with money. I came here where I was meted and greeted by a professional organization, and it was still terrifying as a 23-year-old man. Yeah. Imagine being a 7-year-old boy, promised this dream, told that you go into the furry land of all utopia, and arriving there, and it was actually the gates of hell when you got there. And then having no recourse, no support. Your support were the perpetrators of this horrific torture. So you had no external influence to turn to as an 8-year-old boy, girl. You know, and I know it's very hard to put yourself into that circumstance, because even hypothetically or hyperbolically, it's so far removed from what we see as acceptable behavior.
Yeah. What? So, oh man. So you came across this information, and it had it obviously connected with you. You feel an obligation, a duty. Where do things go from here? What is the just tell we'll wrap up with this. Where are people going to be able to go to find out more about this story, to get involved, or maybe support your work in any way on this?
Look, at this stage, it's I'm just doing it on YouTube and on my podcast audio. I have been approached by a filmmaker from Portugal to do a documentary on this. But again, it takes me back to the whole YouTube debacle. I'm just not willing to invest in and put all this hard work in for it to just be shut down straight away. Yeah. So this story, when it was brought to me, it's been circulated throughout, it's been published for 20 years. However, the Australian government have removed it from publication. Even the Australian National Library doesn't have a copy of this book. It was sent to me from somebody that had the oldest version, and they literally had to take a photo of every page and PDF it to me.
Whoa.
My local library has the last copy circulated, and you're not allowed to take it out of the library. You have to read it on site.
Whoa. This is heavy duty, man. This is how, you know, I will say this, as bad as what those kids went through, and it's about as bad as it gets, the only thing that would make it worse would be if nobody knew about it and that people forgot it, and that that old 100-year-old building came down and they built a shopping mall on it, and nobody knew. So the work that you're doing getting this out, I think is, I mean, to say it's important is an understatement. It's obviously very personal to you, and you'll never, you know, to be able to quantify what this will do to somebody else, you'll never be able to know that, you know, you'll never know what it does to somebody, but it seems like it's,
This is what I'll commit to moving forward. So if your listeners want to head over to the YouTube channel, this is what I'll do. I'm going to head out to there's a memorial garden for, I think, around 90 kids that were named as killed there. I'll head out there and I'll read the next couple of chapters with some video interface so that there is some connection there. It's going to be tough, but that's something I will commit to. It will still provide the audio through Spotify and Apple Podcasts as well. But that's something I suppose this was never personal to me. And again, to tell this story properly, it wouldn't be fair to me to add my opinion or any emotion. I'm trying to keep emotion away from it and just tell the story as this victim written it, because he's passed away now. He can't speak about this anymore.
Yeah. Well, you're going to need more whiskey.
Yeah. Going to need more support. I don't know. Yeah. All of the guys that you speak to, man, I'm more than happy to come and get this story out there. And I think it forms a bigger picture as well. I was speaking to Graham over the Grand America boys.
Yeah.
And I believe they're going through a similar thing now with the local Canadian issues. And then we'll do a show together on the more of a global aspect of this. And I know Gordy over at the Conspiracy Guys, he's more than happy to go through this once he's got some stuff done. And I just think, yeah, like you said, mate, if we ignore this history, we're paving the way for it to be repeated. We really are.
Wow. It's a heavy duty story. But you know what, just because it's heavy duty, just because it brings up really dark emotions and things like that, doesn't mean that we should avoid it. Well, this is something that I think needs to get out. Everybody, if you're interested in checking this out, I'm going to put the links in the description. You can go through there. I would suggest, sharing this, get this information out. We're not going to be able to change what's happened in the past. We may be able to wake people up to the reality of this situation and make it more difficult for them to do this in the future. We hope at least that something good comes out of it. Ian, you're the best, man. I'm really sorry that you've come across this. I mean, I guess
I'm not the only person that's come across this. I'm sure there's been thousands of others, but I've probably got the biggest set of balls willing to talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's probably the biggest issue, right?
Sometimes it requires a big set of balls to talk about these things like that. So,
and if anybody can provide, somewhere that's not going to suppress this story, I'm more than willing to invest and make this documentary and put the story out there properly. I know you guys, you use Rockfin and all of those things. I'm not sure what that looks like in the future, and I'm not willing to go through what I went through with the Shady 10 podcast again. It was just horrific. And I don't know.
Yeah. You build it all up, you get the audience, or you put together something that you're proud of that you think is great. And then some asshole at some tech company that doesn't know anything just hits the delete button and all of your work is gone. I know that feeling better than anybody. I just got a recent second strike from YouTube for having Matt Landman on to talk about the weather. And they gave us a strike because of violence, which makes, you know, it only makes sense in YouTube world, where talking about the weather equals violence. I'm sure this is, I'm sure this topic won't, they won't love this, but I don't care, because it's important for it to get out there. And I'm going to do what I do, and you're going to do the things that you do, and YouTube is going to be authoritarian dickheads like they always are, or at least they have been for the last couple of years. So It's frustrating, but we'll end it there, man. I encourage people to take a look, or, you know, to check this out. It's hardcore, man. It's hardcore. Ian Webster, everybody, support his work and follow him wherever you can. And if you like this episode, please take the additional step of sharing it with your friends and family. Thank you, everybody, for watching or listening. And we will talk to you very soon.